In this conference, you'll have to forgive me a little bit at first because I'm sucking on something in order to soothe the vocal cords. In this conference, I want to talk about the common pitfalls for Catholic parents and how to keep your kids Catholic. And the reason being I think it's a good topic is because there's virtually no family that is untouched by the loss of a child to the world, so to speak. In other words, there's always, you know, it's something in which many of the children are raised Catholic, the parents do a good job, and all of a sudden the kids go off on a tangent. But there are certain common pitfalls which parents tend to fall into, or they tend to commit, or certain errors they tend to commit. And those are some of the things I want to talk about so that people will learn how to actually avoid these so that they don't, so that they're less likely to lose their children. Now, obviously, every child has free will. So you can raise your child absolutely perfectly, and through an act of free will, he can go off in left field. But they're less likely to do so if you develop certain things in them and you do certain things on your side in order to avoid it. When trying to keep your children Catholic, there are two aspects, the positive and the negative. On the side of the positive things which parents must do to keep their children Catholic, there are a few of them. And the first is that many parents teach their children what not to do, which is good, but few teach their children what to do. That is, few people teach their children what the virtues actually are, that is, the individual virtues, and how to obtain them. And part of that is because parents usually don't even know what the virtues are. I mean, they might know that there's prudence, temperance, fortitude, and justice, and things of that sort. But, you know, how many people know what nome is, or synesis, or something of that sort? And so very often the parents don't know what the virtues are, and so they tend not to teach their children this. And this is something that has to be done. There is a big difference between, not doing something bad and actually doing something good. So they really have to develop the virtues. You have to train your children to do the right things at the right time. And this pertains to things like with chastity. Very often you tell parents, no, 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 no. But they rarely tell their children, you know, you should do fasting and you should do abstinence. There are certain things that you should do, you know. The modest man turns his eyes away and thinks of God, that type of thing. And so I always tell women, of course, that, you know, if you're looking for a virtuous man, you don't want to wear things that are immodest because you're not going to attract a virtuous man, because a virtuous man turns his eyes from such things. In other words, there are certain things they have to be told to develop, that is, certain virtues. Moreover, children learn by what I call in my book implicit learning. And what that is there's certain things we'd learn explicitly. For instance, we sit the child down, we write the numbers 2 plus 2 equals 4, and the child sees that, and we tell them that, etc. But children, generally speaking, are fairly intelligent, and so they can just watch you and pick up certain things on how to behave. And they do it without really reflecting too much on it. So, for example, and this is one of the reasons I tell guys, I said, if you want your daughters to marry the right kind of man, you have to exemplify virtue in how you treat your wife so that she learns from that. Not necessarily that she's going to sit down and write, okay, dad treats mom this way, but that she will learn psychologically. She'll build up these associations in her mind of this is what a good man is like. And that's called implicit learning, where they see it. And so when, for instance, if something happens and the mother, you know, lets out an expletive, well, when the kid sees the thing, what's he do? He lets out the expletive. And then the parents are like, where did he learn that? Well, the thing is that this is called implicit learning. They learn it by just watching. Now, the moral to the story is this is also true regarding virtue. If your children see you praying, if your children see you acting, you know, chastely and modestly, if they see you acting justly and making sure that they always do what's just, if they see you being disciplined and faithful to your duties and your state in life, they will be the same. So you have to teach your children the virtues. And that's something that people commonly don't do. They commonly teach their children, don't do this and don't do that. That's necessary, but they also have to teach them what to do so that they develop good habits so that when they get older, especially after they go through puberty, they'll have these good habits in themselves so that they can rest upon them and make use of them. The role of the father is to provide and to protect. On the side of providence, and this is women do it as well. They also provide and protect, but in a slightly different way. On the side of providence, it is a common pitfall for parents to provide for the material welfare of their children but neglect their religious upbringing. Now, I realize here that's probably not too much of a problem. But sometimes people will teach their children what needs to be known as far as religious doctrine, that is, intellectual formation, but they will not provide for them spiritually by doing prayer and fasting and mortification and things of this sort. And this is something that starts from the day you're married. In other words, even before. Once you get married, and your intention should be to have children, then what you want to do is make sure that you're doing prayer and fasting and asking God, you know, that our children will receive the grace in order to do what is right. And this just doesn't mean just prayer. Our Lord said that kind of demon has to be driven out by prayer and fasting. I'm not suggesting that your kids are possessed, but what I am suggesting, again, although you might think otherwise, what I'm suggesting is that it's not just the prayer. You have to offer up your sacrifices. And there's ways to do it. You know, when your kid acts up, I always tell people this, it's the same thing, spouses can use this between themselves as well. If your spouse does something annoying, you offer that up for them. If you see some defect in them, you're going to suffer that defect, so you offer it up for them so they overcome the defect. Getting mad, getting angry, or, you know, making observations about it is probably not going to help that much. You're better off doing some type of penance. Well, it's the same thing with children. Especially when they're younger, you can offer up the sufferings that go along with getting up at night and feeding them and things of that sort, or when they cry and that type of thing for them. But it's something which parents very often don't do. That is, they might pray for their children, but they don't do mortification and things of that sort for them. On the side of prayer, most families do not have a consistent prayer life together within the home, and that's very common. In other words, there should be a time set aside each day, whether it's at night or in the morning or wherever the time is, where they sit down and say either the family rosary, which would be good, or at least some set of prayers. Parents themselves very often do not have a consistent prayer life. Going to Mass and receiving the sacraments is not enough. It's necessary, it's a good thing, but it's not enough. St. Augustine makes the observation, if you do not pray, you will not be saved. Now, what he means by that, it's interpreted by St. Thomas, is that we have to pray to God as a matter of justice. We have to lift our mind and heart to God as in a form of a sacrifice, as a matter of justice to God. And so if you never pray, you're not rendering what's due to God. He's our Lord and our Creator, so we should be praying to Him. And so if you don't pray, then what ends up happening is you're just not going to develop the virtue of prayer, which incidentally prayer is also a virtue. But you should also use the prayer to pray for your children continuously. You should try and get into the habit of praying always for your children. But also it's a matter of children seeing you pray. And not just always at the family time, because then people can get the idea that the only time you pray is when it's in common, and that is completely false. Now, it is true that we should pray in common because we're social by nature. Human beings are social by nature. But the fact of the matter is that prayer, especially the higher levels of prayer, require solitude. And so if you're praying consistently alone from time to time, and I realize when you have a lot of children, that is really difficult, but spouses have to do the tag team thing. Provide time, even if it's just 10 or 15 minutes. First of all, parents will usually find their spiritual life will begin to significantly change, especially if they're doing meditation. But the children will recognize, okay, prayer is an integral part of a good Catholic life. It's not just going to Mass. It's not just doing that. Because if your child is praying regularly, he's not going to leave the church, generally speaking. Whereas if he never prays, he's going to leave the church. And there's a corollary to that. One time, Fulton Sheen, when he was the bishop up there in New York, there was a priest who wanted to leave the priesthood, and Fulton Sheen asked, when was the last time you prayed? And the priest said, about a year ago. And so the point being is that people will leave their duties, their religious responsibilities, because of the fact that they're not praying. If you're constantly conversing with God, you're not going to leave Him. And that's one of the things that you have to get, and children will learn by seeing you, that, you know, this is part of the Catholic life. Sanctified perfection is defined as excellence in grace. So you have a lot of sanctifying grace in your soul. In other words, God looks at you and is very pleased. But it's also the adornment of the soul of all of the virtues. And that means that your children have to be striving for perfection in order to provide the graces, but also to provide protection, which we'll see here in a little bit, for your children, and that they see that mortification, as I mentioned before, and prayer and fasting, all these things are part of it. Most parents fail to take on penances for the sake of their children. In other words, they don't, you know, when they see one, like little Johnny's 5, he's getting angry very often. The parents won't, you know, they'll discipline him maybe, but they won't sit there and say, okay, I'm going to fast for a week. You know, follow the church's fasting laws. I'm going to follow those for a week. By that I mean you follow them the rest of the year, but you also do it for that week. In other words, one full meal and 2 meals that don't equal full meal, and they'll do that for a week so that he receives the grace in order to stop this. And people will see that their children will actually be transformed quite a bit. So they have to provide those things for them on a spiritual level. Then there is the necessity of following right order. There is a hierarchy of authority which God established in 3 ways. By the natural law. In other words, the natural law determines that, essentially speaking, men are head of the household. That doesn't mean that they can lord it over their wife. I always tell men, because once in a while you'll get a woman that comes to you and she's complaining because her husband is treating like complete garbage. And I say to him, I said, you have to realize that your authority is not for your benefit. Authority is what is given to you for the benefit of your children and for your wife. So that means that the way you become selfless is by doing the things for your wife. Okay, but the point in all this is that there's a certain order, and God set up a certain hierarchical structure, and the demons know this. They observe it. And this is one of the reasons why they went after Eve, because if they knew they could get Eve and subvert her order out from underneath Adam, then they could undo Adam. So this is there's a certain structure and a hierarchy that God set up. And we have this from the natural law. And part of this is just because men and women are just designed to do things differently. Men are more analytical, generally speaking. Women are a bit different in a variety of different ways. But then there's also the divine positive law. St. Paul said, by the inspiration of the Holy Ghost, women be subject to, or submissive to your husbands. And I'll tell you this, it's going to come out in my next book. I'm working on it. It's very slow, partly because of my responsibilities. I'm writing a book on the psychology of masculinity and femininity. And one of the things I discovered in writing this is that St. Thomas says that women are in 3 states. In the state before the fall, women were in the state of subordination because the natural law dictated that women were under Adam, that Eve was under Adam. But how do we know this? Well, because in Genesis account, God brings Eve to Adam for his judgment. And to pass judgment on something, you have to have authority, St. Thomas says, over it. And he also gave her name, which virago in Latin, and that was the name which, and to name something indicates authority. So parents have the right to name their children because they have authority over it. So we know this. But then when Adam and Eve fell, she entered into a state of subjection, which meant before the fall, the state of subordination, Adam always looked out for her well-being. He always was concerned and solicitous that she was, you know, that she was provided for, etc., protected her, etc. But then, after they fell, he became selfish. He didn't pay attention to her. He didn't look out for her well-being. And this is why St. Paul says, women, be submissive to your husbands. Why? If you're submissive to your husbands, there's a natural inclination in a man, when a wife is submissive, to basically give her what she wants. I always tell women, look, you don't need to beat the guy over the head. You just need to bat the eyes. I mean, and that's far more likely to get something out of him, because men are a bit soft usually in relationship to their wives in that regard. Whereas if she becomes acrimonious, he's just not going to give her anything. On the flip side of that, you can't expect your wife to be submissive if you don't love her and manifest that through proper forms of affection. So that's why St. Paul says men must love their wives. Okay, then, so that was the remedy for the state of subjection. But then St. Thomas says that in heaven, women are neither in a state of subjection nor in a state of subordination, because some women rule in heaven. And I think that's a profound thought, because obviously Our Lady is the Queen of Heaven and Earth. And there's women who are far holier than men, and in heaven it's not based on the order of nature. See, the hierarchy in this life is based on the order of nature. But in heaven, it's based on how holy you become. So the issue isn't whether you rule in this life. The issue is how holy you become in this life through the circumstances which God has placed you in, being male and female, etc., and how you develop that in your spiritual life. So, what's this all mean? How can a child be expected to be reverent, honor authority of the parents, and be obedient when the wife does not honor or obey her husband? It's this implicit learning thing again. She's going to see them arguing. She's going to see the mother not wanting to be subordinate, and then it's going to that's what he's going to learn. When she does not follow right order, the children implicitly learn that authority does not always have to be followed, especially when that authority tells them not to do something that they actually want to do. St. Thomas makes an observation. He says, what rises against an order or authority is deprived of that order and the principle of that order. What does this mean? It means if a wife refuses to submit to the authority of her husband, she loses the spiritual protection and providence of her husband. This means that when a wife volitionally rejects the authority of her husband as her spiritual head and head of the family, she takes herself out from underneath his spiritual protection, just like Eve did, which flows from his office as head of the household, and becomes vulnerable to the demonic, since she has taken herself out from the hierarchy of authority as established by God. And what that means is this. God established this hierarchy. If you remain within that hierarchy, you enjoy the fruits of that hierarchy. And that means that the principal function of a man is to provide and to protect, not just physically, but spiritually. And this means that if she refuses to be subordinated to that order, she loses the benefits of that order, and as a result, she becomes subject to the demonic. Moreover, if she counsels her children contrary to her husband in a matter over which he has legitimate say, or if she refuses to allow the children to be under her husband, she affects the spiritual providence and protection of her children. While the husband can still exert his authority over the children, if the children take the lead of the mother in contravening his authority, the children will lose that protection. We can also say that this even if the children do not go contrary to the consent of their mother. The father, by virtue of the office of fatherhood, has rights over his wife and children. But these rights are ultimately ordered towards their benefit, not his. And so when the wife and children submit to the father, they enjoy the fruits of those rights, that is, spiritual providence and protection. Therefore, a wife should not view her subjection to her husband as a loss of freedom or control, but as a form of protection and providence, that is, a means to her own holiness and spiritual safety. Many children are lost because they never develop a healthy understanding of the subjection to authority and right order because of the discord between the parents. And this is something you see very often. It's amazing the amount of virtue and right order in children whose parents follow this right order. And, you know, you can shoot me, you can kill the messenger, but the fact is that the natural laws, God set up this order in the natural law, and he also told us in the divine positive law. And then I said there's one other way, and it's by the ecclesiastical law. Even the popes, up until the 1930s and 40s, used to say the man was the head of the household. But they used to say, of course, that, again, this is for the spiritual welfare of the wife and children. So that's one of the things I really would recommend. If children see the right order within the home, it will have not just a providential, or that is, it will not just protect the children from demonic attack, but it will also provide psychologically and spiritually for the children a capacity to see what is rightly ordered. The next is that most parents live with one foot in the world and one in their religion. And this is a big problem. This is one of the surest ways to lose your children, since they will learn that you can be a half-hearted Catholic. And quite frankly, today the world is far more interesting on a certain appetitive level than the church. So how is this done? Well, it's by letting them listen to music that's morally degenerate or bad, appetitive, and the content is bad. That's, in other words, they're listening to forms of music that are, you got to get them away from that. And how do you know? You know, they always say that music gives us a certain pleasure. It's a, you know, it's part of the aesthetics of music. When you hear it, it gives a certain pleasure. And how do you know that it gives a certain pleasure? Well, especially with kids who listen to rock music, you know, they have an appetitive attachment to it. You know, and how do you know? You take it away, which causes pain. And then they get, the kids, it gets almost impossible to handle. And so the point is that if they're living in the world and they're listening to this music that is disordered and causes disorder, you can't expect the kid to be obedient and rightly ordered. Also, by letting them have unrestricted access to TV, letting them have free reign over what they view on the internet, by not watching the company they keep, there is a real false idea that, oh, well, you know, you can't fully protect your children. Well, that is true. And so we just have to let them play with whoever and just hope that our upbringing helped. That's just nonsense. As long as they're in the state, as long as they haven't reached the age of majority, parents have an obligation under the virtue of justice to make sure that their children are keeping right company. Excuse me. And there's a number of different ways. In other words, that they're not real fervent about the religion. They don't pray consistently and things of this sort. Or, you know, they spend more time shopping on the internet or going to the stores or driving around and doing things like that rather than praying, then the children are going to realize, oh, okay, well, you can be worldly and Catholic at the same time. Next, parents fail to be consistent in discipline and reward due to a lack of virtue. In other words, the parents themselves, let's face it, it's hard to discipline children because of the fact that you love your children and love is defined as willing the good of another. Well, you don't want to spank your child because on an appetitive level there's a bit of discomfort and pain, and so what you really want is to love him up and kiss him, etc. But in this particular case, he doesn't need it. What he needs is a bit of discipline, and this requires the virtue of fortitude because it's arduous and difficult. Children, as I mentioned before, have a natural inclination towards being disciplined because they have a natural inclination towards the virtue of justice and restitution. So they know that if they smack their brother, they've got to make up for it, you know, that type of thing. And also, it's part of the virtue of justice because punishments must be proportionate, and they must have right order, as I was talking before. If the parents do it out of anger, the child will end up failing to see the right order, that is, the virtuous end for which it's done. In other words, he's just looking at it from the point of view of, man, mom was mad. You know, I'm taking a beating because she's really mad, you know, rather than, you know, I wasn't that bad, you know, type of thing. So it can't be done out of anger. It has to be done out of a sense of justice and a desire for their right order, which also means it has to be done out of charity. As I mentioned before, charity is defined as the virtue by which we love God. In other words, it's impossible to love God for his own sake and our neighbor for the sake of God without the virtue of charity. That's what St. Thomas teaches us. And you can love God from a natural point of view because he gives you all these little goodies and benefits, but that's not, St. Thomas says that's not charity. That's just a natural human love. But if you really love God and you love your children from the point of view of charity, it means that you will desire that they are brought up morally, and that means a certain amount of interior discipline which requires exterior discipline. It must be done to make the child virtuous and not done to allow the parents to sate their desire for vindication arising from anger. Lack of discipline is perceived by a child as a lack of caring and love, ultimately. In other words, I fell into all these disorders because my parents wouldn't discipline me, which if a person finally gets to the point where they get their life in order, that's usually the conclusion they draw. Consistent discipline does not mean excessive, overbearing, or without reprieve. In other words, St. Thomas says that sometimes there's a virtue of mercy, too. And the virtue of mercy is the virtue by which you set aside the application or punishment of the law for the spiritual well-being or for the benefit of the common good. And in the case of the children, the mercy is applied by looking at what is best spiritually for the child in this particular moment. In other words, you don't always spank your children every time they let out a peep. Because then, the human nature being what it is, we're not perfect, and the children can't be perfect, and so they feel like they're being punished for something that they can't attain. Whereas if they're punished rightly ordered at particular times when it's appropriate and that type of thing, then they will recognize that, okay, they're not just beating us because they enjoy it as much as we deserve it. Anyway, all right. And this comes from the teaching of Scripture. Our Lord said in the Old Testament, fathers, do not nag your children lest they lose heart. And what that means is, and that applies even to mothers, if you're constantly nagging, what happens? Well, you're unpleasant. and eventually they get sick of you. And it's the same thing even among spouses. If one's constantly picking at the other, or if they're constantly henpecking, or, you know, or if he's just constantly picking at her, eventually they lose heart, because they which is a way of saying they despair, because they don't think they can attain, they can't ever please you. On the side of things that parents must deal with that are negative, parents provide and protect physically, but they also very often do not provide or protect spiritually. As I've talked about this, providence spiritually, I haven't talked about the protection spiritually. In other words, most parents, they might protect children by keeping certain things away from keeping their friends out of their company, or they might make sure they don't read bad things that will cause moral depravity and things of this sort. But most parents do not take spiritual warfare seriously in their lives, nor in the lives of their children. I hate to say this, but there are things called demons, and I don't mean to keep coming back to it, but they're there, and they affect you and your children. In fact, they're so smart, they know exactly what button to push in your children to get your buttons pushed. So what's the moral to the story? Parents have to do certain things in order to protect their children at home. Parents very often fail to realize that they can also invite demons into their home by the sins which can affect their children. Remember this authority structure I was talking about? The demons make use of it. If you can corrupt the father and the mother morally, then what you do is you actually, because they're the head of the household, then what ends up happening is that if you can gain headship over the, or if you can gain control over the head of the house, you basically have control over the whole house. So if parents, and there's two ways in which this is done. One, you keep the parents disordered, and that disorders the children just on a psychological and a moral level. But there's a spiritual side that most people are unaware of. If the father particularly, but also the mother, if they commit a sin that is particularly heinous or grave, not in all cases, because God determines the spiritual warfare, that is, he determines the battlefield. What it can end up happening is if they commit a sin, they can actually allow or invite the demons into their home. So if the father has a particular vice, like sins against the sixth commandment. I've actually seen this. I saw a case where the father had a vice against the sixth commandment. There was it's called a generational spirit. That spirit affected every single one of the kids except for a few of the daughters. And so what does this mean? Exorcists talk about what they call generational spirits. Parents can invite demons into the home, and then those demons affect the children. Those demons are then passed to the next generation and the next generation and so forth. And it can go on for generation after generation after generation. Things such as spousal abuse, this is one of the cases. Part of that's psychological too, but some of it is they're actually inviting these things into the home. Or sins against the sixth commandment is a very often common one. Or habitual lying, or things of this sort. And so if parents aren't leading lives of virtue, and if they're not getting the confession regularly, they can actually invite certain things into their home. It's not just that kids have a disposition like their parents, and so they're like, oh, well, you know, he has a problem with chastity, and I did when I was younger too, and it's just because of the gene pool and that type of thing. It may not just be that. It could be that you've invited the demonic into your household, and that has caused the problem. Most parents fail to make use of those things provided by the church to protect their children from the onslaught of demonic attacks. For example, there was a woman who had a child who was diagnosed bipolar. And so she brought him to me, and the priests are allowed to give a blessing out of the old ritual, which will actually ward off the demonic. And so I said, well, because I've personally always thought that by the time someone gets to the point where they're diagnosed as bipolar, it's not just a merely natural cause. It's gotten so bad that there's some type of preternatural cause involved. And so I started saying this ritual over him, and in 2 months he was completely off his medications and totally normal. Then we discovered, I thought, well, I'm going to start using this on adults. And in the process of that, and mind you, these parents were living, you know, good Catholic lives, but fortunately they brought him to me and they you know, there's something had happened. We don't know what it was, but something had happened and it divided and this kid got affected by it. Through no fault of his own, we're convinced. But with adults, we discovered the same thing. Adults will receive this blessing, and then what they discover is that over about 3 days, there's this complete lightening of all of the bipolar symptoms. And then it slowly starts coming back. And then you just keep doing this. And after about 2 to 3 months, they're almost to the point where they can get off their meds. So the point being is that parents can actually do things to invite demons into the house, and it can actually affect them. The case of one guy who's bipolar, he's invited demons into the house, and it's now affected all the children. And now they're all diagnosed with it. And I'm not convinced it's from a biological cause, that because of the fact that the children were totally normal until the father failed to protect the family because there was a witch living next door who was quite active. And so, of course, she was using the spells against the people next door to her, and he failed to protect them. The point being in all this is I'm not saying that you don't go to your next door neighbor and say, hey, are you a witch? Although I do tell people, make sure you know what kind of neighborhood you're moving into. And I don't mean to scare people, but the point being is that parents have to make sure that through their own sinfulness, they don't invite certain things into the home. Conversely, they need to make sure they make use of those sacramentals which the church provides in order to provide protection for them and their children, such as exercised and blessed salt, which they can eat, holy oils, a number of the blessed sacraments, sacramentals, such as St. Benedict medals can be placed around the home in order to keep a certain level of protection. Again, I don't mean to make you paranoid. Not all problems are from the demonic. I tell people Satan isn't under every rock. He's just under every other rock. And so, and if you're disordered, he can insert himself quickly into the process. But the point is that is one of the common pitfalls of parents not making use of the means that the church provides to protect their children spiritually, especially when you have teenagers. Always tell them, make sure you're feeding them plenty of exercised salt. And in the, you know, because you can use it in cooking and things of that sort, because that will help them significantly. And if you do these things, you know, if you protect them spiritually and you're doing the virtue, you're developing virtues in them when they're younger, and you're praying and doing mortification for them, your odds of losing the children are very low. And I'll end with this. There were two exorcists who, in recognizing that, you know, why is it that you have these really good Catholic families and there's always one child that just kind of goes off, at least one child that just goes off in complete left field? And then in the process of doing exorcisms, they discovered that a lot of times it's because of demonic activity. Not all of it, because sometimes people just make wrong choices and then they end up with that problem. But so they decided to start a group called Auxilium Christianorum. You can go to the internet. It's on the internet. It's called auxiliumchristianorum.org. And what it is it's a group in which it does two things. It prays for the liberation of the people that the exorcists are trying to free from demonic influence. But then because it has ecclesiastical approval, it actually provides spiritual protection for the people and their families who say the prayers. And that's why they decided to do it. They said, we've got to do something to protect the people from these kinds of things. And they went to a bishop, and they didn't think they could get it just for to provide protection for the people. They figured they're going to have to do it so that the bishop realizes that, okay, you're my exorcist, I have to let you do this because this is a necessary thing. And so they let him do it. It is a group. I tell people, don't get involved with it unless you have a serious spiritual life, because there is a very profound deepening of the spiritual life by the people. God almost always within the first couple of months strips people of any notion of pride and self-reliance. And so you have to be pretty prepared for it. On the other hand, it's a phenomenal thing to actually provide people, because people advance spiritually very rapidly through this group. So I don't recommend it lightly. But it is something to be recommended to help. And if your children are over the age of 14 and you think they're prepared to say it, then they can also say the prayers. It's very easy to become a member. All you have to do is say the prayers. It takes 5 to 7 minutes per day, and that's all that's necessary to enjoy the fruits of it. And because there are literally hundreds of members that are part of it, you actually enjoy the prayers, basically, of hundreds of people to help protect your family. And then I'll just end with that.